my friends I run with a lot, we went out to run a trail near London last summer, and it was a really, really hot day, and we came across this tiny little like car park in the middle of nowhere with a truck on it selling honestly the best ice lolly I've ever had. And we still are talking about that ice lolly nearly a year later. And it's, I don't know, it's just those moments. I think that's what I like about running, that it makes all the stuff that normally would just seem so boring so exciting. Like, you go for a run and you get to have a shower and put on a warm jumper or have an ice lolly, and it's just the best.
Kia ora, everyone. That was Elise Downing. I'm Matt Raymond.
I'm Eugene Bingham.
And this is Dirt Church Radio, interesting conversations with interesting runners. So our new sponsors, Ultraspire, saw the old code DCR sucks and liked it much better than DCR blows, so they decided to incorporate that.
I don't know whether to be insulted or really insulted.
I think we should be really insulted, but Ultraspire...
maybe really, really insulted.
...who are sponsoring the show want us to tell you that if you use the code DCR sucks...
really, really, really insulted.
...you'll get 20% off one of the new Ultraspire fitted race belts, which are excellent. You can fit poles in there, gels, jacket, lamb shanks, phone, hip flask of whiskey,
insults,
what else, baby wipes, maybe not a baby, but you can get a lot of stuff in there. Sits nicely on the hips, fitted, 20% off. It's $65, and 20% off that, whatever that is. It's a good bargain.
Can you fit maths in there?
You can fit maths in there.
Insults?
Yeah, we're just insulted. I'm a bit hurt.
What was that code again?
DCR sucks. At ultraspire.co.nz.
Yeah.
20% off the fitted race belt. Thanks, Ultraspire.
Thank you.
Sort of.
Well, yeah. You know, we want some nice people. Those people at Further Faster.
Yeah.
They're really nice.
They sent us the dreamiest jackets.
They did.
They really did. So this is an absolute plug for Further Faster, who are at furtherfaster.co.nz in the champion city of Christchurch. Rocky, Joe, Dan, and the crew who hang out all in their matching Montane gear looking like some sort of fit gang.
Elite crew.
Sent us the Minimus stretch ultra jackets.
Yeah.
And my goodness, it hasn't rained since we've got them, but I've been wanting it to.
Yeah, I know. It's like I put it on and I go outside and go, can please rain, please rain.
I've never been more intimidated by a jacket that I've had. I don't know what a hydrostatic head is, but I know that it's 20,000 millimetres worth.
What about, check out that breathability.
I know, I mean 20,000 grams per metre square in 24 hours. That's an insane amount of breathability.
Well, to be honest, I picked 1,900.
Right.
So I was blown away when I realised it was 20,000 actually. But what I really like is it's really adjustable.
Yes.
So like it feels like a personalised jacket.
Yes, absolutely. Almost like one of those weird kind of superhero ones where it fits to you.
Yeah, it's like it wrapped around you. It's like it's just wrapped around you and it just feels comfortable. And I can't wait to run in a storm in it.
Yeah, I'm actually, next time it packs out, I'm going out.
But I've never had... I was fantasising about a run I had around Farewell Spit, which was the worst conditions. And I keep thinking, oh, I wish I could do that run again.
If only I had that. Yeah. Look, it says here it's got a micro fleece lined beard guard.
Does it?
There you go, just for you.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, not being super silly, these are by far the most luxurious.
Because these people deserve respect because they don't have insulting codes.
Best jacket that we've ever, ever used and tried on. And
thanks,
so
Further
excited
Faster.
And thank you so much, Further Faster. And if you want to check it out, go to furtherfaster.co.nz or pop into their store in Christchurch. They're very dog friendly, they enjoy beer, they like kayaking, they like getting out amongst it in the hills. So,
and ask for the Montane Minimus Stretch Ultra Jacket as heard on Dirt Church Radio Podcast.
Fantastic. We're not angry at you guys at all.
No. Thanks, Further Faster.
And Ultraspire.
And Ultraspire.
Sort of.
Kind of.
Dirt Church Radio.
You should say something.
Well, like for the start of a podcast, say something.
I reckon.
Yeah?
Yep. Go.
Welcome. We made it. Episode 38. Wow.
Yeah. And this is a solo. Hey. This is a solo effort. This is a Eugene Bingham. This one is a the intergalactic robot that is Dirt Church Radio has split off into its component halves. And this is a Eugene Bingham job.
Just the interview.
The interview this week, yeah.
But here we are together. Just
absolutely.
For those of you who can't tell, our voices apart, this is actually two people talking.
And it's been a minute, yeah.
Yeah, it has been. You're sounding much better.
I feel much better. Yeah. I ran 6 days last week.
That's good. Not... Did you get inundated with people giving you like remedies and stuff?
I work in an emergency department, absolutely. Yep. Mm. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Everyone who talked to me about the podcast last week was like, oh, how's Matt?
Oh, that's kind.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, speaking of last week,
uh-huh.
Roger Robinson.
It was incredible.
Yeah.
It was epical.
It was. And it's kind of weird. We interviewed him last week, and you should have a listen to the podcast. And then he's writing for Runner's World, like as we speak, about the Boston Marathon. Something about that just blew my mind.
As we're talking, he is literally at Boston writing for Runner's World. And yeah. One of the things that I loved about it is the fact that he is 79 years old and he has had a 79 life. 79
years young.
79 years young, or 79, and he's had a life intertwined with running
yeah.
and has continued to grow and adapt and stay vital
yeah.
and move through that, you know. And
but he also effortlessly entwines his history with the current. I mean, the piece that I saw that I just read this morning actually from Boston was focused on Yuki Kawauchi, who ran that amazing race last year at Boston in the rain and
yep.
won it, and Yuki the citizen runner, blah, blah, blah. But Roger was able to bring in the fact that 9 other Japanese men have won Boston and kind of entwine that history into the current, as I say. And, you know, he's a great writer, really thoughtful, really friendly.
Yeah.
Very kind.
Absolutely. And very generous with his time. And
yeah. Yeah, we enjoyed having him on and was glad to see that a few people went out and bought When Running Made History.
Yeah, that was great. And we'd yeah. encourage anyone to check out Roger Robinson's book, When Running Made History,
yeah.
Canterbury University Press.
Yes. And if you want to see someone terrified writing, read the stuff column that I had to write, the Dirt Church Radio stuff column this week. Right, you know, interviewing an emeritus professor of English is one thing, but writing about him is quite another.
Yeah,
I was kind of sat at my keyboard trembling.
No, it was very good. It was very well done.
Anyway, have read of that. Elise Downing.
Yeah, so Elise Downing is this week's guest, and Elise Downing is the social media and marketing manager for Brekker Swim Run.
Yep.
Who've just done a couple of events in New Zealand as this goes to air. But she ran right around the coast of Britain in 2016.
As you do?
Yeah. I guess it's a whim, but she decided that she'd do that. She'd run a marathon dressed as a crayon prior to that and thought, well, how do I top that? Well,
there's only one way, really, you're ever going to top that.
Circumnavigate the entire coastline of Britain on foot. So 5,000 miles, 301 days, 7 pairs of trainers, and approximately 987 slices of cake later. She ran from London to London via the whole British coast.
Mm. She's a great character.
Yeah, I'm really gutted I missed out on
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I was gutted you went there. Yeah, and I got to go and catch up with her. They were staying, her and her colleagues from Brekker were staying in an Airbnb in Auckland, and they were a good bunch as well.
Yeah.
And it seemed like a good crew, and got to go and, yeah, have a chat to her. And she was real, really good fun and really thoughtful, actually.
Yeah.
Really good thinker about adventuring and being yourself and not being a hostage to social media, and which I mean, she's a social media character, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know, I'm not trying to characterize it like that, but she had a very healthy attitude to social media.
Absolutely. I'm excited because and sort of jumping ahead, the next guest on the podcast, which is, again, a solo effort from me this time.
Yeah.
We had a good chat about social media and its place in the world and modern running, I guess.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. Hey, don't worry, we're not breaking up.
No,
it's
not at all.
It's just been circumstance. Hey, you're going all right?
Feeling better. Yeah, yeah. I'm good.
Yeah, yeah.
Getting there, yeah.
And the relapse course.
The relapse course is out.
Are we allowed
out
to talk about that?
Yeah, no, we can talk
public,
about that.
Because it's public, isn't it?
It's public. It's out. It has 173 metres or thereabouts of
vertical gain. So just to clarify, this is the Riverhead Relapse.
Backyard. So it is the back...
Call it the proper name.
It is the Riverhead Backyard Relapse Ultramarathon and Relay. Now the course is 6.7...
May the 4th?
May the 4th be with you.
May the 3rd be with you
for the Ultra. Mm. But this is 173 metres of vertical gain in total. And there's a hill in the middle of the course.
I was going to say, I had a look at the course profile, and it looked to me like most of that 173 metres was covered in about 100 metres.
It's actually, well, it's incredibly runnable. And if you compare that to something like, and Sean and I were talking about it today.
Sean Collins.
The
co-race director.
Is he? Yes, he is. Yeah. The Biggs Backyard Ultra has 134 metres of vertical gain. And okay. 24 people at that race run 100 miles. By comparison, the Blue Lake 24 hours had 119 metres of vertical gain and four people ran
100 miles. Wow.
It's Riverhead Forest. There's no flat bits in Riverhead Forest. We did the best we could. It's an excellent course. It runs really well. It is challenging, but I guess in the end of the day, this is an event thought up by Lazarus Lake to win an entry to the Barclay Marathons.
Yeah.
And so the...
So it's not going to be running around a track.
No, it was never going to be running around a track. And I guess the we're super excited about it and we are super, super, super looking forward to the challenge that it's going to pose for people. It is going to be hard work, but it was always going to be hard work. And we can't... Like, we're really excited for it. And I guess the standpoint that we're taking is with all this kind of social media chatter about Vert or what have you, is what would Lazarus Lake do and he'd probably do nothing? Or what would Lazarus Lake say and he'd probably say nothing? Yeah. So that's what we're going to do.
Yeah.
The course is the course.
The course is the course.
We're so excited.
Oh, it looks fantastic and plenty of people are excited.
And it is. It's really, really runnable.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe not 30 times, but I know.
68 times.
68 times.
Is it Johan Steen did 68?
68, yeah.
Whew. Yeah. It's going to be great. So that was good to see. We got some feedback from friend of the show.
Yeah, Sue Hardy, about your excellent stuff you should know about negative thinking.
Your. It's our.
Well, it was. It was your. You came up with the idea.
I stole it from our running mate.
Yeah.
Yeah, anyway. Stuff you should know last week about negative thinking and self-sabotaging during races.
All right.
Well, yeah.
Hi, guys. I've been just listening to your podcast on that nasty voice inside your head when you run. Thought I might share my story with you, and I'm sure we've all had gone through stuff like this before. When I run a race, I don't worry about my position in the field. Okay, I might think about it a bit, but it is what it is and I don't worry about it. I don't panic that I have not logged as many miles as everyone else on Strava or that I haven't climbed as many metres, etc. I've never experienced this voice while running before until Northburn the other weekend.
So I'll just jump in here because it's quite a long email, but basically Sue had gone to Northburn to better her successful race from 2016 and kind of it all went a little bit pear-shaped.
And this is a woman who's done the Jungle Marathon twice, has done like multiple endurance events, you know, amount of difficulty.
It was not her first rodeo.
Not her first barbecue at all. So she picks up. So on my second loop in the searing sun, feeling sick on the death climb, the voice appeared out of nowhere. What the fuck was this? And it banged on and on and on about the race. It wasn't saying, you are useless, you can't do this. It was none of that confidence stuff. It was asking me a question over and over and over again. The longer the race went on, the more the voice raged in my head. A totally new concept for me to deal with at 75 kilometres into the race. I tried to talk to it. I tried to ignore it. I tried to accept it. Nothing would stop it. The voice was asking, Sue, how much does this really mean to you? And goodness, it just would not let up. I was way ahead of my time from 2016, tracking well to come into transition at 4 o'clock in the morning, which is 2.5 hours ahead of the last time, ready for the last 60 kilometres when things went pear-shaped. I got lost.
Yeah, and so basically at that point she describes getting lost, stumbling around in the dark, but she did eventually make it back to transition at the 100k mark.
The voice had won. I didn't really want the prize as much as I thought I did, but I didn't know until then. This time, I wasn't prepared to put my body on the line to finish. I'd already done it before, so I knew how hard it was, and personally, I wasn't even prepared to do it myself. I realised that my training had worked, even after getting lost. I still came into transition earlier than previous races. Would I go back? You bet. To run the 100k or the 50k or pace in the last loop, but I will save myself for my other outlandish goals, for which there are many still to do. There is no rush.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So... You know, I kind of read it thinking, oh, this is going to be a story of hope about victory over the voice. But it's not, because sometimes it isn't, you know?
Absolutely. No, it's not. And I think that there's this whole thing about, I don't know, maybe this is a conversation for another podcast, but I think, you know, this whole thing about, oh, just get it done at all costs. Mm. Sometimes
it's not going to happen.
It doesn't work for you.
Yeah, that's right. And so the voice can kind of overcome sometimes.
Yep.
And that's okay. That's okay. Right. But I guess it's you know, she'll learn from that, even someone's experienced a suit, and come back stronger and, yeah.
That's right.
In her many adventures to come. So thanks, Sue. That was really good. And thank you for sharing the experience of someone so experienced. It was wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this weekend, some epic local trail races.
Well, they just, it was jam-packed.
Yeah, the Xterra in the Orongorongos in Wellington, the Waitomo Trail Run, the Wild Kiwi, the Alpine Lodge Loop, the lake, and old Luke McCallum.
Yeah.
Guest of the podcast, a couple of podcasts ago, he ran 69.53 for third at the Waterfront Half in Auckland.
Mm.
Now, that's a new half marathon PB.
Yeah.
Crazy fast.
Hey, I just realised.
We had two other friends set half marathon PBs.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I took that from the results.
And yeah, the timing mat was turned off at the Waterfront Half.
So maybe it was faster, so we might be doing Luke a disservice here. But I think regardless,
it was at least 69.53.
We can say it was a PB. So well done, Luke.
Yeah.
And we did have a couple of mates run it. And
Thomas and Dave, well done to both of you, guys. V-Dave Jack, getting your long dreamt of and tried for goal.
Of sub-100.
Sub-100.
Mm. Yeah. Anyway, well done to all of you who ran those races at the weekend.
Hit it! Stuff you should
know! Right, I finally got around to watching Courtney DeWalter's movie. Well, it's not really her movie, it's a movie about her.
The Source.
The Source. Yeah. About the Tahoe 200. Whoa. You know, I mean, we know from our interview with her that she's a real character.
Yeah.
And we know that she's tough from all her results and obviously what she's been able to achieve in the sport. But what you really see laid bare is her grit.
Yeah.
And what I wanted to talk about, I mean, I don't want to spoil the film. So if you go and watch the film, I won't spoil the ending or anything. But what really comes through is that there isn't a Hollywood ending.
No.
And I think it's all the better for it, because what you see is her reaction when things don't go well. And things, of course, are not going to go well when you're running 200 miles.
Yeah.
It's not going to be a smooth path. But there's something important to learn about coping when things don't go well. And I suppose it harks back a little bit to what Sue was talking about. But in this case, in Courtney's case, what you see is her just the determination and the grit and the problem solving that goes on. Because that's an important thing to learn as a runner, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. It's that sort of the malleability of thought and the malleability of experience, and when things don't go according to plan, how you cope with that and how you adapt.
Yeah, because you can. The one thing you can count on with running is that it's not always going to go smooth all the time. You can have dream runs, but often there'll be little things come along, little niggles, your nutrition plan doesn't go well, the weather throws you off, the course throws you off, you might get pushed over, you know, or fall over.
Yeah.
You know, once I've slid down a bank on my back, that wasn't so fun.
Yeah.
So you get all these little obstacles that come in races, and it's important to learn how to cope with those. And I guess you can strategize for those, but what you really need to be good at is problem solving on the run, on the fly, and being, you know, learning mental toughness.
That's right.
Yeah.
And that's something that is individual to the individual.
It
but
is.
This movie, The Source, this documentary, is a great insight into what happens for the insight of inside the mind of an elite athlete. So.
Yeah. So you can really see, and it's just sort of the way that she copes with things, the way that she deals with her crew, the way that she toughs it out, and the way that she deals with things when they don't go to plan, which I probably just repeated myself about 14 times. But hey, I'd recommend it. Go and have a look.
Stuff you should know.
Stuff you should know.
So right, on to Greatest Run Ever, which is the part of the show where we ask you to write in to us and tell us about your greatest run ever. And this doesn't have to be a race or a mountain summit. It might just be a run around the block. Something that sung to you, something that resonated you for some reason. Send it in to us at dirtchurchradio@gmail.com or via our social media. And this is from Tash Turner from Tiano. It's a nice bit of alliteration there. Yeah. Hey guys, I think I have it. My best run ever yet. This was neither a race nor an impressive distance. Here's the story. I'm excited. I had 2 days in which to make a 12-hour drive, and I realised that some friends were having a birthday party at a hut, the trailhead for which fell roughly at the halfway point of my journey. I excitedly began my drive, brainstorming last-minute costume ideas. The theme was the letters H and N, being the birthday girl's initials. After a late start and a slow trip, I pulled up at the start of the track at 7 p.m. I debated whether I wanted to walk in the dark before coming up with the idea to pack light and run in. Stoked with my stroke of brilliance, I took off, enjoying a fairly technical trail, blowing away the cobwebs after so long in the car. An hour in, I was forced to turn on my headlamp. My energy levels dipped, and I asked myself again, do I really want this? I chucked in some drum and bass and went for it. Bit of a doof doof, eh? About a kilometre from the hut, my buddy spotted my light and let out a huge cheer. Whooping back, I couldn't wipe the grin off my face. I stopped 500 metres out in the darkness and I slipped into my hero costume. Undies over tights and a cape made from my sleeping bag liner. As I arrived at the party, the cheers reached a joyous crescendo and I found a 20-person human tunnel to run through, cape trailing. What an entrance. I collapsed in a fit of exhausted and ecstatic giggles, and as I rolled around on the ground, tears streaming down my face, I felt overwhelming gratitude for the environment that we have available to us to play in and the wonderful humans who call this land home. New Zealand, you bloody ripper. Thanks for your great podcast. It feeds my psyche every week, and I love it. I'm currently working towards the goal of running all of New Zealand's great walks in 2019. If anyone listening wants to jump on board to run one later in the year, I'd love some company to push me or to collaborate on logistics. Cheer. Some Tash. That's probably one of my favourite greatest runs ever.
That's so
ever.
Cool. Yeah.
Fantastic. That is the... Yeah, that's the ethos of a greatest run ever.
It sure is. It's not a race.
No.
It's not climbing a mountain.
No.
It's just undies over tights.
Undies over tights and a cape.
Yep. And yep. A tunnel of... bringing people home, whatever.
So,
what do you call them?
Moving through, it's segueing nicely into the wrong way, right way, Raymond Way bio in terms of costumes.
Yeah.
Elise Dowling is the dictionary definition of someone who has an adventurous spirit.
Absolutely.
She ran around. She's not an elite runner.
Yep.
She's not someone who grew up running. She's not someone who comes from a running family. She is someone who ran to keep fit. And someone who then ran a marathon dressed as a crayon, and that didn't go so well for her. And
surprise,
then
surprise.
She decided to run around Britain. One single loop, and she did.
Mm.
And that has both changed her life on a personal level and also, you know, probably a professional one as well. She is a speaker, she's a social media person, and she's now the social media manager for Brekker Swim Run. And Eugene, you sat and talked to her face to face in Auckland last week. I had the opportunity to listen to this conversation from a fan's perspective because I wasn't involved with it, and it's just brilliant. So without further ado, here's Eugene's conversation with Elise Dowling.
So we are here with Elise Dowling in Auckland. No less. Welcome to Dirt Church Radio.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, it's a lovely sunny day in Auckland. My first time here, so.
Well, welcome. So what brings you to New Zealand?
So I work for Brekker Swim Run, who are an endurance event company, and we have one race in the South Island and one race in the North Island. So just over here working on those for 6 weeks. So pretty cool work trip.
Yeah, that's right. That's an amazing work trip. So you have been in the South Island. Because it was a race in Wanaka.
Yeah, so we had 2 weeks in Wanaka for our race there. And then I've had 2 weeks holiday. So I went and ran a bit around the sort of Nelson area. Did the Abel Tasman coastal track, which is nice. And
beautiful.
Yeah, it was stunning. It was like a holiday brochure. It was all sandy beaches and turquoise seas. And then just having a couple of days in Auckland. And then the whole team are heading up to the Bay of Islands for our next race, which is next week.
Yeah.
So trip sort of coming to an end, which I'm really sad about.
Wow. So tell us about Swim Run.
Yeah, so Swim Run, and to be honest, yeah, I didn't know much about it before I started working at Brekker, but essentially you run and swim, obviously, but you do the whole thing in your wetsuit and your trainers, so you don't get changed at any point, and there'll be up to like 20 transitions. So you'll say like, run around a bit of coast path, swim to an island, run over the island, swim back to the mainland. So yeah, it's pretty cool, and the races, yeah, they last up to about 10 hours. You do it all with a partner, which makes it quite good fun. You can tether yourself to each other. So if your partner's much fitter and faster than you, you can get them to drag you up the hills and through the water. And I'm doing my first race in August, and my partner is definitely the fitter, faster one. So she'll be dragging me along.
So you'll be getting a good strong tow cable.
Yeah.
So you have to stay within a certain distance, don't you, of each other?
10 meters is the official thing. But I think, yeah, it's quite a nice part of it. Because, like, yeah. Yeah, obviously it is a long day out. And when you're doing like long ultra runs and stuff, it can be a bit lonely. So I think it's actually really nice that you get to share that with someone else and kind of laugh about all the ridiculous bits and help each other in and out of the rocks and stuff like that. And obviously a big part of the team is this kind of safety aspect, because obviously you're swimming open water, so it's good to have someone else right by your side, because the fields can spread out quite a lot over the course of the day. So
yeah, I imagine. And is it so the two races in New Zealand, are there races elsewhere that you're going to as well?
Yes, yeah, so we've got four races in the UK. So we've got two in the Lake District, one in Wales and one on Jersey, which is a little island just off the UK. So I'm doing my first one in the Lake District, which I'm so excited about. Having watched the Wanaka one, I got a great job on race day because everybody else was in race HQ, like doing spreadsheets. And I got to go around on the media boat with our photographer, just having a great day, basically. And it just looks so fun. And you know, when you're running and then you're near a body of water and it's really hot and you're like, oh, I just want to get in the water. You literally can. That's what swimrun is.
Yeah. Brilliant. Absolutely. Yeah. Of course. Yeah. You can just dive in the water and cool off. So, the one in the Lake District, what's the distances or how long will that take?
So it's about 43K in total. And then I think it's about maybe like 7 kilometres of swimming and the rest running. But in the middle, you've got like a fully graded fell race up a mountain. So I picked that one because apparently that's the one to do if you're a runner, not a swimmer, because the swimming's very new to me. But I haven't drowned yet, so getting there.
And so, so it's quite a challenge to take on.
I'm actually really excited because I've always been put off like triathlon or anything, mostly because you have to just buy so much kit and I'm scared of going down hills on the bike. So it should be really, really fun. I'm doing it with one of my best friends, so we're trying to come up with a team name at the moment and we can't think of anything. But we've got we've been doing training sessions together. We're starting our open water ones when I get back home, which basically, especially in London, it's just going to involve running around London in a wetsuit looking ridiculous.
That won't look weird at all.
No, I'm not expecting any funny looks.
But taking on a challenge like that, I mean, none of us should be surprised that you're taking on a challenge that's, a proper challenge.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't an official part of my job contract when I started working at Brekka, but within about a week, I was like, I'm going to have to do one of these, aren't I? And my boss, Ben, suggested might want to start with the shorter distance. And I was like, nope, full distance.
You don't know me.
So yeah, it should be fun.
Yeah. And just while you've been here in New Zealand, you've obviously, as you mentioned, got out on some trails.
Yeah.
And I think I saw you had your first night in a backcountry hut.
Yeah, so I did. So the original plan, because we had about 10 days of holiday between two races to take. And the original plan was I was going to go to the Nelson Lakes National Park and do the Travers Sabine circuit, but with a bit of an extra loop onto it. And it sounded great, really fun. And then the day before we were going to start, all the severe like wind warnings came in and everybody was saying don't go up there, and it was like, at best it's going to be miserable and at worst it's going to be really dangerous. So had to do a quick reroute, so flew to Nelson and did the Abel Tasman. So did it over 2 days and stayed at a place I can't even try and pronounce, but yeah, it was cool. We got there and earlier in the day, within 5 kilometers of setting off, I'd managed to fall over and like skin my leg.
Oh, no.
And I didn't think it was that bad, but every single person who passed me was like, what have you done? And a small child was like, mummy, why hasn't she got any skin? I was like, no. And then I got to the hut and everybody else was horrified and all started getting out their first aid kit. So I made some friends based on this gruesome injury that I'd...
There's nothing quite like making friends because of an injury, is there?
Yeah.
And everyone will stop and say, oh, yeah. And then
but people are so nice. Like, literally everybody stopped and asked. I could have started, like, a black market trade in antiseptic wipes. I got offered so many. But, yeah, people were really, really nice. It was a beautiful hut right by the water. And, it was fun. But trying to save weight, I hadn't taken a cooker or anything. And I figured it was only 2 days. I could put up with just eating dry pita bread for 2 days. But everybody else, they were walking it over a few days and had their cookers. And they were all drinking hot chocolate and like eating delicious things. And I was sitting there with my dry pita breads. And I was really
and
sad.
And your gammy legs.
Yeah. And they all were like, why is your pack so small? I was like, I don't have a cooker.
So Abel Tasman, and did you get any other tracks in?
So I did the Abel Tasman Coastal Trail and then I did the Dunn Mountain Trail, which I think is meant to be mountain bike trail, but I did manage to beat two mountain bikers on foot, so I was really happy with that. I think they were going quite slowly and having a lot of picnics, but I took that as a win for
maybe
myself.
Maybe they had a cooker.
Yeah, yeah, maybe they did. But yeah, and that was like really beautiful, and it was, yeah, it was quite chilled in the end. And we went kayaking around the coast as well, so that was fun. Felt like I actually had a proper holiday.
Yeah, and I love that you consider a holiday doing these extreme, basically ultra marathons.
Well, compared to the like 120-mile hike around Elsa Lakes we were going to do, it was quite relaxed. Spent a lot of time in cafes drinking coffee, and yeah, I just think it's like such a good way to get out and see a bit, and that's why I like running, because yeah, you can cover like 25 miles in a day and see loads, whereas if you just go for a little stroll, you only get a few miles in.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
kind of extreme sightseeing.
So is that what is it about running that attracts you to it?
I don't know, I think it's changed quite a lot. I only started running, well, I guess it's been a while now. It was early 2013, so 6 years ago now. And I just wanted to get a bit fitter, I think. I was at university and doing my year abroad in Sweden at the time, and Sweden's really expensive, so I couldn't afford to go to the gym. So I thought I'd start running. And I just remember like the first time I ran for 30 minutes, and I just thought that was mind-blowing. I was like, that is so long. Whereas now 30 minutes is like quite a short run, but I just thought that was incredible. I remember ringing my brother, who's definitely the runner in our family, and I was like, I've run for half an hour. And I was so excited, and I think it just felt a bit like magical, because it was something I never thought I'd be able to do. And then it just sort of got a bit out of hand from there, really.
Yeah, considering what you have got on to do. Yeah that's probably an understatement. But so you didn't have any history as a runner before that?
Absolutely not. I was so unsporty as a child. Like, I used to skip PE all the time. Like, I absolutely hated it. And now, like, almost all of my friends are runners. It's all I ever do. It's my whole social life. Like, I got injured last year and I was like, well, what do I do? Because I can't hang out with any of my friends, because all they do is go running together.
Yeah. And so did you, I mean, once you did sort of get into it, did you find that you were a natural, or is it just, what is it about you that means that you can do these crazy adventures? Well, when I say crazy, amazing adventures.
I think, I don't know, I guess I'm quite stubborn. But when I first started, like, I really wasn't very committed at all. So I did a half marathon, just a road half marathon in like 2 hours 18, I think that first one. So definitely no speeds to write home about. But I was quite happy to have done it. But I was always really, really bad at like sticking to a training plan. So I signed up to a race, and then my first marathon I did to raise money for charity, because I was doing a trek. And I dressed as a Crayola crayon, purple crayon. And I just hadn't really done any training, which was a really bad idea.
Probably not.
It took me a long time, and I cried for about 8 miles of it. It was honestly one of the worst days of my life. And it took like quite a long time. I don't know, really. I think I would like the idea of being a runner, but I actually couldn't really bother to do the running bit. But then I guess probably more so the last couple of years. Like, it's just become such a like ingrained part of my life, I guess. And I just love being outside, and that, yeah, like I said, like, that's just the main way I see my friends, like, we'll go run a trail together.
Yeah.
And yeah, I find that hiking a little bit boring, whereas like running, you get to run down hills, and running down hills is like the most fun thing ever.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know, the running with friends thing is what makes it, isn't it?
And yeah,
you don't get the same when you're tramping, I don't think.
No, I agree. So. And it's just that moment where it's like, oh, this is really hard. But then afterwards, you've done it. And it's like, my friends I run with a lot, we went out to run a trail near London last summer, and it was a really, really hot day. And we came across this tiny little like car park in the middle of nowhere with a truck on it selling honestly the best ice lolly I've ever had. And we still are talking about that ice lolly nearly a year later. And it's, I don't know, it's just those moments. I think that's what I like about running, that it makes all the stuff that normally would just seem so boring so exciting. Like, you go for a run and you get to have a shower and put on a warm jumper or have an ice lolly. And it's just the best. Like, that shower after a run is worth all the pain.
You're absolutely right. Because when you were describing that, I was just remembering, and we call them an ice block, but you call them an ice lolly. A lemonade one, so the most plain one possible. But I had it, I don't know, halfway through a sort of a 12-hour day at a shop. I remember coming across it, eating it. It was on the Hillary Trail out here in West Auckland. And, 12-hour day, came into the Piha shop and bought it, and was like, what do I want? Yeah. Oh, I know, I want a lemonade ice block.
Yeah.
And normally you'd be like,
yeah,
your lemonade ice block. But it was, I can taste it now.
I think that is it. Or like, yeah, in the winter when it's freezing cold and you've been out in the rain all day. And then, yeah, you get to go home and there's like a dry pair of socks. And like normally I just put a dry pair of socks on without even thinking about it. Yeah. It's just a given that you get a dry pair of socks every day. But after a run, it's just, and I think that is one of the thing I like about running. It just makes everything else feel so nice.
Yeah. It sort of makes you appreciate those things that you take for granted.
Yeah, definitely. Or after, I did the West Highland Way with some friends last summer, which is 96 miles in, yeah, the Scottish Highlands. And we did it over 3 days. It rained a lot. And we were, there were four of us sharing this tiny broken three-man tent. And it was like raining inside the tent. It was raining outside the tent. And like, my backpack had really rubbed. Like my back was a mess. And it was quite hard. And then we got to the end and there's a pub at the very end of the trail. And it's, yeah, Wetherspoons, a rubbish British pub. And there, I've got this lasagna, so just a microwaved vegetable lasagna. And it was honestly the best thing I've ever eaten. And usually that I feel, oh, I don't want to eat that. It's horrible.
Yeah. We'd seen it back or something.
And it was just, yeah, incredible. And yeah, it's just, I think it's just the moments like that. And we were just still sitting there in this pub like, oh, I didn't think we'd be able to do that. It's pretty cool that that was just, yeah, we did it.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. It's just... being in the tent, you know, you imagine quite miserable circumstances.
Oh,
but,
yeah.
But you remember it as a good memory.
Yeah. Yeah. Within
because of the shared experience and because the, yeah.
Yeah. It's funny, isn't it, that within a few hours, all the pain is forgotten.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, I've still got the blisters, but let's go again.
Yeah, it's like those marathons where you get to the end and go, I am never, ever doing that ever again in my life. And that night, you're sitting on a laptop trying to find the next race.
Yeah. I did Valencia Marathon in December. And I just, the absolute classic, went off too fast and died a horrible death at the end. And my mum...
Because who would expect that to happen?
Oh, no. Yeah. Always good to throw your race plan out of the window. I don't know why I thought I could run a minute faster than I trained for, but at 17 miles, I found out I couldn't. And my mum had been watching and she found me sitting on this curb and it was quite hot, but I had this foil blanket on for some reason. And I was just crying on a curb. And I was like, I'm never leaving the curb. She was like, well, you can't live here. I was like, I can. I'm just going to live on the curb forevermore. But then, yeah, by the end of the day, I was like, should we go again? Like, when's the next one?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, well, I don't know why. It must be some sort of switch that flicks in and you kind of forget it's the pain
weird,
and just
it?
Remember the good things.
And I do always think when I'm like having quite hard, because it is always quite hard. I was like, I wish I could just have a normal hobby. Like other people just sit at home, go and watch a film. Like, why is this my hobby? But you just forget those moments, don't you, when you're deciding that it'll be a fun thing to do?
Yeah, absolutely. You're back into it, yeah. So speaking of, you know, not sitting at home watching movies, what on earth made you run right around the coast of the UK?
Yeah, so it's weird because, like, now I'd say I very strongly, like, identify as a runner. Like, do it, like, 5 times a week, like, my favourite thing to do. But back then, that really wasn't the case. I'd done the Crayola Marathon.
Sorry, I've just taken a mouthful of cake. You couldn't come and see you without bringing cake, so I did bring some ginger.
Yeah, I was really happy. It was delicious.
And I have admitted that I kind of failed on the New Zealand cake front. I should have bought sort of Anzac biscuits or maybe pavlova, but
that's all right.
Ginger slice. Yeah. Anyway, sorry. Why a Crayola crown?
But so basically, I think I actually can't quite remember, but when, in my very first week at university, I dressed up as a Crayola crayon. For a night out, and there's loads of pictures of me as a crayon, and it was one of my favorite fancy dress costumes, so I thought I'd apply it to running, I think. And also the costume wasn't that, it was just like a sort of dress thing, but it wasn't too cumbersome, really. It wasn't like a big sort of foam costume or anything, so I thought it'd be quite easy to run in, because obviously, as I said, I wasn't very prepared. I didn't want to make it much harder than it already was, so that was why the crayon a crayon. Yeah, so I'd done that race, and then I'd like dabbled a bit. But I really, really didn't have much of a strong, I'd say, very casual runner at best. And then I was literally just sitting at work. I graduated from university the year before. And my job was all right. It was a bit boring. And I was looking at a map for some reason. And I was like, I wonder if anyone's been around the coast before. And I had a look and people had sort of cycled it and a few people had walked it, but no one had really ran it. And there was a girl at the time, Anna McNuff, who ran the length of New Zealand, actually. Well, she was doing it at that time. And she was a friend of a friend. So I emailed her saying, oh, I've had this idea to run around the coast of Britain. Like, do you think it's a good idea? And she sent me the best email back and like Skyped me. I think she's in Wellington. Like, yes, go and do it. And I was like, well, Anna's running like 20 miles a day through the New Zealand bush. I'm sure I can make my way around the coast. I really failed to take into account that Anna had like a sort of, she was like a GB rower, like very athletic background, quite a lot of like sporting pedigree that I did not have.
Well, she hadn't probably run a marathon on dress as a crown.
No, she hadn't.
Yeah.
But yeah, so, and I just thought, oh, like other people do these things. I'm sure, I honestly don't know why. Like, I don't know why I thought I could do it. And I told a few people and then, yeah, I quit my job and 6 months later, I was on the start line. And then I had a bit of a wobble because it's like, oh no, I've got to actually go and do this thing. But I think, yeah, I just always liked the idea of doing a big adventure.
Yeah.
But the UK seemed quite safe because it was like, there weren't any like vaccinations to get. There weren't any scary animals. If it all went wrong, my dad could come and pick me up within a few hours. So it felt kind of quite safe. And I didn't really have any commitments, didn't love my job, so I was like, oh, I might as well just give it a go. But looking back, I like can't believe I was brave enough. I don't think I would be brave enough now.
Wait, really?
No.
Wow, that's amazing, because you do seem someone who does just jump into things and is brave enough to take on challenges.
I mean, my mum would agree with that. No thought ever goes into anything.
That's not what I said.
There wasn't much thought that went into it all. And I remember I kept setting aside a day to do loads of planning. Because I was like, I'm going away for what I think will be about 10 months. I should plan something. And I'd sit down with my notebook and a map. I was like, I don't really know what I'm meant to plan. Like, I'll just have a tent and I'll make my way around the coast. Which sort of is how it happened.
And is that the way it was?
Yeah, pretty much. So I took a tent because, well, I thought it's an adventure. You have to take a tent. Anna had a tent and I basically just copied whatever Anna was doing and applied it to the British coast. And also knew that I couldn't afford to like stay in a hotel every night or anything like that. There's not that many huts if there was some backcountry huts all around the coast, I definitely would have done that instead, but there aren't. So I took my tent, but I'd never camped, like wild camp by myself before. But I just thought it'd be fine. I'll just put my tent up anywhere. In my head, the second I crossed the start line, I was going to become so adventurous and brave and not scared of all the things I was actually really scared of. But I started kind of blogging about it and mostly just for, yeah, my friends and family to read, really. But people kind of started reading it. And in the end, quite a lot of people from like running clubs and stuff got in touch and asked if I needed somewhere to stay. And then I'd stay with one person and they'd put me in touch with their friend around the coast, because I guess I wasn't scary stranger by that point, because I'd already stayed with their friend. So I ended up staying with about 200 like total strangers, which is like by far one of the most kind of special things about it.
Yeah,
but really unexpected.
Yeah, so yeah, that the kindness of strangers.
Yeah, like honestly, because before I went, I'd like read about people doing adventure things elsewhere and being taken in by people and stuff, but I thought, oh, that won't happen in Britain. But yeah, it did. People were just so mind-blowingly kind to me. And to be honest, if I'd had to actually camp every night, especially like through the winter when it just rained every day, I don't know if I would have made it to the end, because I think I just would have been so miserable. But quite a lot of the time, like obviously I did a longish run in the day, but then I was just living like a luxurious life. I'd get to someone's house and they'd cook me dinner and do my washing. I was like, oh, I don't get this treatment at home.
Sounds luxury, yeah.
Yeah, it was great.
So, I've always wondered, what is it like, not at the start line, but like, say, night two.
Yeah.
When you've started, the kind of adrenaline of that start line has gone.
Yeah.
You're sitting there, you know, I don't know if that particular night you were in your tent or in someone's house or whatever, but what's it like when you, I mean, is there a little bit of, oh, what have I done here?
So, I did the first day. It was a Sunday. And quite a few friends and my parents both came to run with me. And so it was just a really fun, like, Sunday run. It was 17 miles, which at the time, like, felt like really quite a long way. And it was quite hard. And I thought, what have I done? Like, I found the first day hard. How am I going to, like, make it through the rest? And because I started in London and went out along the Thames and then around the coast. So at this point, we're still a very urban area. So I stayed in a Holiday Inn hotel with my parents, and they were going to run the second day with me as well, and then they were leaving to let me get on with it. And in the car park at the beginning of day one, I just had an absolute meltdown. I was just like, I don't want to do this. This is so stupid. I just don't know why I thought that I could do this. Had a bit of a tantrum. It was only about 8 miles that day. So eventually set off. It was really unscenic along a horrible A road. And then that night, again, I'd booked somewhere to stay because, not really anywhere to camp in Gravesend. I think that's where I was. And I just remember sitting in this like tiny hotel room, like literally, what am I doing? Because it just felt like, yeah, very daunting. I was like, there's a long way to go here. And at this point, yeah, I wasn't anywhere very nice. I wasn't running nice trails. I was just in like the outskirts of London. So it was really strange. And to be honest, it wasn't until I got to John O'Groats in Scotland. So that was about 8 months in, I think, and had about 1,000 miles left to go, which sounds crazy, but I was like, oh, that's the home straight. I'm nearly there. And it wasn't until that point, I think, I actually started to really enjoy it, because then it felt like it was manageable. Whereas up until that point, I was just like, I can't think about it. It's too much.
Yeah. Because that must be the temptation to think too far ahead when you've just started something. And if you do think too far ahead, it's going to crush you, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. It was, definitely a mend. Because at the beginning, especially, and this was always the plan, loosely, was to kind of just sort of build up really slowly while I did it, because I didn't really know how I was meant to train for something like that. Because if I'd started being able to run like 30 miles a day, I just don't know if that would have been that helpful. And we didn't have like the hours of daylight were super short at the beginning because it was the middle of winter. So I wasn't really doing mega miles at all. Like I think at the beginning, rarely going over about 12 miles. So I actually had a lot of time to play with, and it was just a bit strange. I was just quite bored quite a lot of the time. Whereas at the end, we had a lot of daylight, and I was up to doing kind of like 25 to 30 miles quite a lot of days. So that filled up time and sort of felt a bit more like I imagined it would. But at the beginning, I was like, this is just quite easy, really, isn't it? So yeah, it was a weird one.
Yeah. What can you give me? I mean, for people who are not familiar with the coastline of the UK, how much of it was remote versus how much of it was sort of. I mean, I imagine, look, so the romanticised vision from down here is that you're sort of going from lovely country pub to lovely country pub. But
I mean, yeah, some places. it's hard to kind of put like a proportion on it. But the good thing was because like the coast is quite built up, obviously like lots of people holiday there and stuff. Every single day, even in the most remote parts of Scotland, I at least went through like a village that had a shop. So I never really had to carry much food, which was really good. Most days you go through like a few villages and there are certain sections where, there's just loads of stuff. But I'd say the most remote parts were some parts of Devon and Cornwall were quite remote. And then the Highlands of Scotland for sure. But it's actually, like very well populated because everyone's got quite a lot of like fishing history. Definitely wasn't too lonely, but quite a lot. And at the beginning, when I started sort of writing about it, I was like, oh, come and join me for a run. And then people kept taking me up on this offer. And I actually quite often found it quite hard to run with other people because I think people come along and I get it because I'd probably do the same to someone. And they'd be there like with their like hydration pack on as if they were just going for like a 20-mile training run. And I'd be like, well, we're going to stop for a sandwich after 3 miles. And I think people just couldn't quite grasp that we had much we were going to like stop and eat a sandwich, and also that I had this like quite heavy pack, and I just found it quite a lot of pressure not being able to just go at my own pace. So it was difficult running with other people sometimes. So that's what it's great to stay with people, because I actually found I quite liked running by myself, but then meeting people in the evening, because otherwise there was a lot of pressure to make sure that other people had a nice time. Sometimes it just was a rubbish day and it was hard to sort of pretend it wasn't.
So you'd feel like the host who wants to keep making a nice experience for them.
Yeah, and it was quite hard to do that as well as sort of just keep myself going.
But also on the other side, as you've said, it can be lonely.
Yeah. Yeah, it was difficult because now like, I absolutely love running with people. And I think to be honest, they probably didn't even mind, but I just felt like I was going really slowly and people weren't having a nice time. But then I have so many great days where like, I'd stay with someone, they'd come and run with me the next day. And I think that was always nice because you kind of got to know them a little bit before. And then, just such beautiful days. Oh, they'd show me a better route than the one I was planning to take. And I think what's nice is seeing how proud people are of like the areas they're from. And I think especially runners, because they love getting out there and running these trails. And I'd say where I was going to go and they were like, oh, this bit's amazing. Or one guy told me I had to stop at this particular pub on the Dorset coast. And it's still my all-time favourite pub. Like, it's a great pub.
Why?
It's called the Square and Compass. Mm-hmm. It's in Worth M'Travers, which is a tiny village near the coast in Dorset. And they only serve a pasty, like one flavour of pasty. That's their entire food menu. What more could you need? And then in the winter when I was there, they had like hot mulled cider and they just have loads of beer in barrels and there's like straw on the floor. It's like super rugged, but it's just a great pub. And I never would have gone and stopped in there if this guy hadn't told me that I should stop there. So it was really nice getting that kind of local knowledge, I think. It was really added to it.
Yeah. And I think that's something about runners too, isn't it? Is we like to share those experiences, like to share, make sure that others know to run that trail. It's not like, I don't know, you know, some other sports like fishing, for instance. No one's going to tell you their favourite fishing spot.
Yeah.
But everyone wants to tell you their favourite running spot.
Yeah, definitely. And I definitely, if I run a great trail, I want everyone to go there. My parents are both really into running and I'm always phoning my dad, like, you have to come and run here. Like, run this specific trail, go to this pub, eat at this cafe. And I definitely agree. And I think that's like such a nice part of it. And I think living in London, you do end up being a bit sort of London centric as if there's not the rest of the world. And it was actually really great to meet all these people from tiny places I'd never heard of. And they all did just kind of interesting things. And just felt that clearly very like proud of these beautiful places they were from. And I was like, oh, I don't want to live in London.
So you got to the finish line. What were the stats? It was like 5,000 miles.
Yeah. So to be honest, I was rubbish at actually keeping track. But it was around 5,000 miles. It took me 10 months almost bang on in the end.
I think 301 days or something.
Yeah. That's the one.
Mm-hmm.
So I finished late August. It was August bank holiday weekend in the UK. And about a month before, I'd kind of penciled in the day I thought I'd finished and roughly sort of mapped out the end. But I put in a few buffer days because I was a bit worried that something might go wrong or might not get there. But it all went fine. So I actually ended up with nothing to do the day before. And like my friends' stuff had all arranged to come the next day. So I was like, oh, I can't really finish. I sort of just wanted to just finish it and get it over with. But so I stayed with a friend and he went to work. And I actually went for a run because I just didn't know what else to do. So I just went for a 4-mile run around London. And then I think I went to buy some new jeans because I didn't own any real clothes. And then the next day, I think I had 15 miles left to do on the last day because I felt like I should save a bit. Like, I didn't want to just run like a mile to the finish line.
Yeah.
So I did the first 10 miles.
Too fresh at the finish line.
Yeah. I did the first 10 miles by myself, I think, and then the other five with some friends. And it was fun. Like, it was a lovely day. And then we got to the park and, my friends and family and my nieces and nephews were all there. And it was great. But it was kind of a bit, you know those moments when you're running and you just, like, get to the top of a hill and that, like, something looks beautiful and it's quite kind of, like, overwhelming. And you're like, wow.
Yeah.
I felt like I'd had so many of those moments going around and the finish line just wasn't one of them, or I'd handle it because I'd done quite a lot of long days. There were definitely weeks that I ended where I was just absolutely exhausted and so happy to like get to the finish line of that day or that week and have a rest day, and I just didn't feel that way at the finish line because obviously I've had the day off the day before. Like, I kind of felt fine, and I guess it's when you get to the finish line of like a one day or like a multi-day race or something, you're like, oh, I'm so, like, you have that real high of it being over, mostly because you're knackered and you need to sit down.
Yeah.
But I just didn't have that feeling, so it was a bit weird. We just had a picnic in the park. I went to the Notting Hill Carnival that night with my friends. And this life was just, like, very normal. I actually got home because I stayed with some friends in London for the weekend. I went home to my parents' house on the Monday and I was absolutely convinced my mattress was different. I was like, Mum, you've stolen my mattress. She was like, no, I haven't. I was like, yes, you have. This is not my mattress. So clearly I went a bit mad at the finish line.
So when, like, once you've done something like that, I mean, you've been quite open about it. There's a bit of a down afterwards. And it is quite hard, isn't it?
Yeah, so I think I basically dealt with it in, like, the worst way possible.
Someone's got to.
Yeah, so I just, and if I was ever going to do anything like that again, and if anybody else was planning on it, my like number one advice would be to have like a coming home fund as like part of like you're planning how much to save for a trip, I would definitely plan a coming home fund, because I was totally broke when I finished. I didn't have a penny to my name. And it was just, I think that made it worse, because I was just like, I just don't really know what to do. And I just sort of moped around at home for a while, asking my dad for pocket money and feeling like I was 12 years old again. And then I got another job in London in a tech startup, which wasn't a great job. And yeah, I just sort of moved back to London. I wasn't really running. I kept kind of going for a really long run, then getting injured and then not running again. So I basically spent a year eating a lot of ice cream, not running, doing a job that I didn't really like. And yeah, I just kind of tried to pretend. I think I sort of pretended it had never happened, really. And then it was kind of probably, yeah, so I finished 2.5 years ago now. And it was like kind of over the last sort of year and a half, really, that I've really got back into running and doing all those things around my day-to-day life, I guess. I think if I just spent a bit more time outside, it probably would have been fine. But instead I was like, no, I never want to run again.
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah, it was definitely difficult. I definitely, if I didn't think again, have a bit of a plan for coming home, because I think that's what was made it difficult, yeah.
That's really good advice. I think because people don't think of it, do they? They just think of getting to the finish line.
Yeah, yeah. And I, yeah, totally ran out of money. And I was just like, well, yeah, it was really difficult. Whereas I think if I'd had a rougher day, even if it was just, I don't know, I was going to go on holiday or something, it didn't need to be like a full life plan. I just think I needed something. Because he said, I got home and nobody really cares that you've been on this trip. Like everyone's just like getting on with their lives. And yeah, obviously everyone was at work and I was like, I just don't know what to do.
Right.
So, yeah. But yeah, and then yeah, getting injured wasn't great. I'd managed to go a year without any injuries. And then I think I had every injury in the year afterwards.
Oh no. Yeah. Do you think that was your body sort of shouting at you like, we need a rest?
Yeah,
or
I think.
Is it just because you weren't running as consistently? Or
I don't know, really. I guess because I went from running like all in trails, quite like, although a lot of mileage, like very low intensity, like lots of breaks. Mm. And I'd obviously built up to it quite slowly. And then went back to like running like just on roads again, running a bit faster, I guess. And then, like I said, I'd sort of like sign up for some sort of event, not have really ran much, but think it'd be fine, and then go and do it, and then didn't really have enough training, and then yeah, just got quite a few niggles, but it seems to feel good now. Yeah. Managed nearly a year without an injury, which I'm really happy about.
touch wood. I was thinking too, I mean, you, like, I know of you because you became this, it was almost viral, this
that's so weird to hear.
And I know it's kind of like, I think I heard you on the Marathon Talk podcast.
Funnily enough, I went kayaking in Avon Tasman National Park the other day, and the guy at like the kayaking booth, I gave him my name, and he was like, oh, you're on Marathon Talk.
Yeah.
And then somebody emailed me saying they saw us in New Zealand and they listened to Marathon Talk. I didn't realize Marathon Talk was so big over
there. There you go. But I think I heard you, and then it was like, I need to follow you, and just, you know, wow, this is amazing.
Yeah, because I spoke to them like 2 months in, I think. It's quite early
on. It was
early,
wasn't it? Yeah. But it's sort of like, I've wondered, what was it like for you? Or were you aware of how much of a kind of a storm or how much interest there was in you? Here you are sort of trudging along these lonely roads or these lonely trails.
Yeah.
And there's this kind of world watching you.
So I definitely have never thought it was on that scale. So it's kind of weird to hear. But I guess, yeah, like, I literally just started sort of, like, I set up a Facebook page and I started just posting about it. Mostly because I thought most of my friends and family would be really bored by it. So I was like, if I set up this page, then they can follow it if they want to. And if not, they don't have to worry about what I'm doing every day. And then I think I first put, because it was the Facebook videos that I think people watched quite a lot. And like now, as part of my job, like I work in social media marketing, I do a bit of video editing and stuff, but I didn't have a clue how to do any of that then. So it was all just one take, like talk to the camera. And I started doing that, I think I did the first one on the second day, like quite early on. And I remember going to post it and just thinking, this is so embarrassing. Like, I was mortified and I couldn't believe I was going to post it. And my friends do all laugh at them all the time, and they keep threatening to make some sort of like mashup, because apparently I had little catchphrases I said all the time. But yeah, so I just started doing it, and then I guess I never really thought that many people were watching them. In my head, it was just my mum clicking like play over and over. But I actually went back a few weeks ago to look at some from then, and yeah, they've got quite a few views. I was like, that's so weird. Yeah. And then every now and again, so like, I was doing a marathon with my dad a couple of years ago, and a woman stopped me because she'd recognise me. Nobody ever recognises me if I don't have my hair in plaits and a headband on, because that's what I had in every video. So it's good disguise, just have to take my hair out. And yeah, this woman stopped us because my dad was in quite a lot of videos as well, and was like, oh, I recognise you, I followed you. And I was like, great. She was like, I just thought you'd be a bit faster, to be honest. And like mile 20 of this mountain marathon. Me and my dad were like, so cheeky.
Oh, wow.
But yeah, but then?
Did you trip her up?
No, I didn't. I was too tired to do that. But yeah, it was definitely weird. But I think in a way, like, people always say like negative things about kind of social media and the internet. But I just had such a positive experience. People were so nice. And like a lot of the people I stayed with, I kind of got in touch like via the Facebook page and stuff. And yeah, it was people were just absolutely incredible. So yeah, I had a, it was definitely an unexpected sort of nice addition to the trip, I guess. But it was a bit difficult sometimes because I was very wary that, like, and it annoys me a bit sometimes when you follow people doing adventures and they're just really like moaning about it. And I'm like, obviously in very like privileged position, like I could just give up my life and go running for 10 months. I didn't want to moan about it, but also I was like, I don't want to say it's great every day because it's not. And it was difficult to know what to share sometimes.
Because there's that whole thing of being authentic, isn't there?
Yeah.
And so you don't want to be, hey, this is great, but neither do you want to be a sort of just moaning away.
Yeah, it was a difficult balance to try. So I just ended up diverting and talking about cake most of the time.
You did talk a lot about cake, and I was going to ask you about that. Has it just become a thing? Has it become a bit of a millstone for you, or do you seriously like cake?
So I do like cake, but I don't really know how it got. Like, it just got really out of hand. And then, like, in one 24-hour period, four people came and found me on the track with different cakes. And by the fourth bit, I was like, I cannot eat any more of this. And now, like, I'd say at home, I'm quite healthy. Like, I eat a lot of vegetables, but I just became, known for all the cake eating. But it was, it was quite funny. It was a funny addition. And I guess it was, like, something to talk about with people.
Yeah. And you did get a lot of cakes. So,
There's an upside. That was kind of the harder thing when I got back. I was so used to eating like 5,000 calories a day. And then I got back, I wasn't really running. I was still eating 5,000 calories a day. I obviously put on quite a lot of weight, and then running was really hard. So I was like, this is weird, isn't it? And I was like, oh, you probably can't have a whole cake a day now. Should probably curb that habit.
Yeah, there's probably a calculation going on somewhere that needs to be done. Yeah.
Yeah, no, it is funny though, the way you get sort of known for stuff, I guess. Like, you almost become a bit of a kind of caricature of yourself. Like, my friends always laugh that always call the my online accounts like Wholesome Elise. They're like, because I guess people just do see like a side of you, because like they're all about running, so all I ever talk about is running, and obviously I do have other interests in my life. It is funny.
Yeah, it is funny, isn't it? That sort of balance, especially when you are, you've got a social media presence and so on. And so you kind of, people think they know you?
Yes.
Do you struggle with that?
I don't really struggle with it, I guess.
Not struggle there.
But yeah, no, it is weird. And it is the fact that, I think people do just see like one quite small side of your life, really. And I'm like, I do other things, not just eat cake. And well, that year, that is all I did. But yeah, it is funny the way. And I think people do kind of latch on to things a bit. So I don't think I even talked about cake that much at the beginning. And it just became a bit of a thing. And then I started talking about it more. And then, it is a strange one. But you do sometimes, like, I met someone a while ago and they're like, I just thought you'd be a bit taller. Like, people have weird ideas about you in their head, I think.
Yeah, yeah. And I guess that's what I was meaning about being at the centre of this thing of, like, it must be quite strange to, have this persona out there, have this... people's imagination of you, this image of you.
I guess I'm just quite unaware of it, really. Like, I never really think about it, but my friends do all find it really funny if we go to like a running thing and someone recognizes me, because they're just like, and I think that's a quite nice thing about your friends and family, is they actually don't care in like a nice way. Like, they don't love you more because you've gone for a long run, which is quite nice, but they just find it really funny that anybody like knows who I am. My brother just thinks it's hilarious.
And I'm gonna do exactly what I've just said and completely project upon you something that it probably helps that you seem quite down to earth. Like, if you were someone who was prepared to kind of go with it and be this persona,
well, I think
then you probably crash into it.
And I do a little bit like sort of work with some brands, like like side stuff as a result of the social media and like blogging and whatever. But I think I realized quite quickly when I finished that I didn't want to go down the like full-time adventurer route, because I found it really uncomfortable, the idea of like my job being like just sort of being your own brand kind of thing. Like, and I just knew that wasn't for me. And and it's really fun. Like, I've met like some of my best friends I've met basically through the internet, and like I got to do loads of cool stuff. And like, and I think social media can be really, really positive, but I think I have quite a positive experience of it because I can opt in and out. Like, it's not my job, though occasionally make a bit of money out of it. It is just a sort of side. I have a full-time job, so if I don't want to post something or I don't want to be online, I just don't. Like, when I was having a bit of a downtime post adventure, I just didn't post anything for about 2 months, and that was fine. Whereas I guess if that, I imagine it's quite high pressure if that is literally your job and you're like, well, I don't feel great today, I'm gonna have to put a video up on the internet because I'm not getting paid.
Got to get those clicks.
So I think because there's no pressure really, so that's what makes it quite positive.
Fantastic. So what's next? What are you up to? I mean, you've got training for this upcoming swim run.
So I started working at Bracket in November, and it's been so great to kind of finally have a job that's like 100% what I like doing. So yeah, it's definitely a fun job. So be traveling kind of around the UK with Bracket this summer, going to their events, and I've got a few races and stuff lined up this year. So nothing, I think. Like I said, I was a bit injured up until about a year ago. So I'm just trying to quite gradually, like, I've got to stage now where I can run like 4 or 5 times a week, no problem. So I'm just trying to keep that up really. I just like running places. I just like going to places and running. I think maybe at some point I'd do another thing.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't do 10 months again. I found like being away from home, like you do basically have to give up everything else in your life. So I'm not sure I'd do that again.
Yeah.
And I also I absolutely hate running with a heavy backpack.
Right.
Like, it just destroys my back. Like, I don't know how people, is there a way to stop it rubbing your back? I've tried so many things and I just can't. I just can't make it stop. So I'm fine until I put a tent in there. As soon as I put in camping equipment, then the pain starts. So I think if there's some way you could do it, with like loads of huts and stuff, so you don't have to carry full camping kit, I'd definitely be, if anyone's got any good trail suggestions where you don't have to camp all the time. Because I like camping, but I don't want to carry the tent.
So are you tempted to follow Anna McDuff's footsteps and come to New Zealand and do something?
Well, so New Zealand's always been very high on my list of places to come. But it's just a very long way from the UK. And then when, obviously, got to come out with work, I'm not very good at sitting down. And on the plane out here, I was so grumpy. And I was like, this cannot be worth a 30-hour plane ride. This country better be great. But it definitely lives up to the hype. It was worth the plane ride. Obviously, it's been amazing working out here, but definitely want to come back and actually explore some stuff. And I met a few people who were doing the Te Aro, and it just, it's just so beautiful. Like, everywhere here is great.
Oh, well, we're glad that you've had a good time here.
I suppose
it's a little bit strange. New Zealanders have this kind of thing of light runners. Have you had a good time? I'm not sure you had a good time. It's sort of feel this obligation.
I think it's so worth the hype. And it just, I'm sure, obviously, I've only really been doing outdoorsy things, so I've probably got a biased view of it. But it just feels like everywhere is just so geared up to doing all the fun stuff. And in the UK, we have a weird thing where nobody will put any signposts on mountain trails, whereas everything's nice and well signposted here. So I like that.
Yeah,
mostly.
We talked about how I lived in Cheltenham I did the Cotswold Way.
Yeah.
Most of my time was spent looking down at a map.
Yeah.
Because I was just trying to find the trail.
Yeah. Although, not being great at map reading, I do need to learn to navigate better, but plotting routes and stuff I always find a bit tricky. But I've discovered the View Ranger app since I've been here, and it's amazing. So useful. Just go on, draw a route around some tracks and follow it. So I've really enjoyed that in New Zealand.
There you go, another discovery.
Hey,
we had better let you get back to, because this is your first official day of work. But we do ask everyone, for all of our guests, we ask, what is your greatest run ever? Now, it doesn't have to be a great adventure. It doesn't have to be a race that you've done or something, but just a race, a run that you've done that you got to the end and you thought, wow, that is for some special reason to you personally, it's a great run. So what is your greatest run ever?
I think I'll give you one example, but I feel like there's probably quite a few that could come under a similar sort of umbrella. But last September, I went with my dad and we ran the Tour de Mont Blanc route around the Alps that crazy people do in like 20 hours, but we did it in a week. And it was just like, the Alps are just stunning. The trails are beautiful. And every day it was that feeling like you'd get to, they have like mountain huts, but they have restaurants. So a bit more going on there than some of the New Zealand ones, I gather. But like one day we had done this absolutely beautiful run. And at the end there was the hut was at a dairy farm. So there was just loads of cheese. So it was great. And we'd started quite early. So we finished at about 3:30. And I just remember sitting there in the sunshine with beer and a plate of cheese with my dad. And I was like, this is just so great. So yeah. I'd say that was one of my favourite ever runs.
Fantastic. Yeah, sharing a special moment that you will never forget.
Yeah, and a lot of cheese. Wrong with that.
Yeah, and beer.
Yeah.
Oh, well, thank you very, very much for your time.
Thanks for having me.
Fantastic to have you on the show.
Thanks for having me. It's awesome.
I was shocked when I was listening to that conversation about how rude some people can be. I thought you'd be faster.
I know.
My goodness.
I know. Sit down. Who would say that to someone?
Well,
get out of here.
Anyway.
Yeah. Which, I mean, she can just come back with, I ran the entire coast of Britain. What have you done lately?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. I also realised I had fallen into a trap where, so... She talked about that whole cake thing.
Yeah.
Became like a thing.
Yeah.
Even though she doesn't, you know, she likes cake, but not that much. But it became a thing. So I was going to see her. So what did I do?
Bought a cake.
I took cake. What a dick.
No, it's not a dick thing to do. I mean, I guess it's sort of like the, you know, I guess it's the thing. It's like people who, you know, Dean Karnazes probably gets far too many pizzas. Hawaiian pizzas than he likes. And Anton Kropitschka, people go, why have you got your shirt off? Mm. Why haven't you got your shirt off? It's because that's how you market.
Yeah. But it's a good reminder that don't necessarily think that the thing that's projected out there in public is who that person is.
That's right.
Mm. Well, that was deep.
Yeah, it was. It was good. So, okay. So thanks very much for tuning in. We'll be back next week with another interesting conversation with an interesting runner.
All by Jingos.
Yeah. This one is exciting.
Yeah.
We're on social media at Dirt Church Radio. We're across all the platforms. They will email us at dirtchurchradio@gmail.com, or we've got our dirty old website, which is dirtchurchradio.com.
Where you can read the greatest runs ever.
Yep.
We load them up each week and we see from the traffic that heaps of people are going there to read it, which is cool.
You'll find us across all the podcast platforms as well, iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, or you can download us directly from the dirtchurchradio.com website. And if we're not where you want us to be, let us know. Please subscribe, rate us, and also if you like what you see, spread the love. It would be great if as many people as possible heard this show, and for that we need your help.
Mm.
Greatest run ever, write into us.
Yes.
Yeah.
Tell us about it.
Your help.
Yep. And we're getting some good ones. Keep them coming through.
Yeah.
They're exciting. They're always good fun to read. Thank you to this week's guest, Elise. And thank you to our partners, Ultra Aspire.
For the Faster.
Yep.
And CLE Athletics.
Yep. And thanks to our editor, Kieran.
Yep.
We've got that guest next week. Yeah, I'm excited.
I mean, all our guests are exciting.
They
and
are.
It feels, yeah, we've got some good stuff coming up. So stay tuned until then. And ka kite.
Ka kite. Thanks, Rigby.